Future funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Cardiologist Thomas Graboys had it all. A big-time doctor on the dream team that treated NBA star Reggie Lewis. He had status and power and a reputation as a patient's doctor, the kind who would really listen when someone's health was in trouble. Then his health tumbled. The doctor became the patient. Parkinson's disease, trouble moving, trouble thinking. Now the doctor is telling a powerful story of Parkinson's from the inside out. This hour on Point, Dr. Thomas Graboys gets very honest about a rough disease, Parkinson's. Joining me now in the studio, and I'm very happy to have him, is Dr. Thomas Graboys. While no longer in active practice, he is a professor of medicine at Harvard University, senior physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and president emeritus of the Lown Cardiovascular Research Foundation. In 1985, he and a team of colleagues shared the Nobel Peace Prize for their work with the group International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. He's out with a book co-authored with Peter Zeitlin called Life in the Balance, a physician's memoir of life, love, and loss with Parkinson's disease and dementia. Dr. Graboys, thank you very much for being here today.
It's my pleasure to be here with you.
Also with us, Thomas Graboys' wife, Vicki Graboys. She's CEO of Sukasa Designs, an interior design firm. Vicki Graboys, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And finally, we're joined by Dr. John Groden. He's director of the Memory and Movement Disorders Unit at Massachusetts General Hospital, an expert in Parkinson's, and the man who first officially diagnosed Dr. Graboys with the disease. Dr. Groden, thanks so much for being in here today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thomas Graboys, Dr. Graboys.
I'm here.
We see you, and we're glad you're here. And I have to just first express my admiration for the candor and honesty at some of the most profound possible levels in this book. You say that in some ways your intent here, and I believe you're doing it, is to continue doctoring by sharing the experience that you've gone through in this last decade. Not an easy road. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling actually perfect today.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's one of those great mornings. But as you were talking, there were three or four points I was trying desperately to hold on to. And sometimes I think that there's little synapse in the brain, and as I'm trying to go along, I lose sight of the end of the tunnel.
Parkinson's can do that, and there are up days and there are down days on an up day. And if you're having one today, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, how much do you feel like you've still got intellectually of all that you had?
In the past, I was both narcissistic and vain in this regard.
Mm.
And it was very difficult for me to accept that something was going on in my body that I couldn't control.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the game is losing control. And we're all desperately trying to hold on to what we've got and to maintain a level of individualism in a process that's mm-hmm. chipping away at my ability to do activities of daily living. What's all I think important to comment on is that,
why don't we just go back to Tom's question?
Well, it's not a problem. You know, we're looking here at a progressive disease, as you say. It chips away.
Right.
And you, as a medical professional, are acutely aware of that. We can all see from your, you know, incredible background in medicine what you had. But to feel that slip away it's brutally difficult.
And it's frustrating, and there's anger involved, and there's look for constant support. And fortunately, I've got a tremendous team, beginning with Vicki, and John Groden has been a tremendous physician in my care, or as he is caring for me.
Mm.
And we've sometimes talked about it would be great if every couple of months he picked up the phone, or your physician picks up the phone and say, "Oh, I was just calling to see how
yeah.
you're doing."
Yeah.
And in the past, when that's happened, it really is, it's almost like you hit a home run with the patient.
Yeah. And it was what you were renowned for, that kind of physician's careful, close touch with their patients. Vicki Graboys, it's a good day for your husband today, but we know they can't all be good when you've got Parkinson's. How big is the swing?
Well, the swing really has a lot to do with the his underlying or his main disease, which is Lewy body dementia, and that is the cognitive dysfunction. And basically, I describe it as being having a switch on, a switch off. Some days it's on, some days it's off, but some minutes it's on and some minutes it's off. Today is a good one. Morning time is usually his best time. Today, so far, so good. I can't, you know, we can't complain.
Dr. Grodin, do you remember back when Tom Graboys, Dr. Graboys must have first come to you? Here's a very respected medical professional who must have been wondering, what is going on with me? How aware was he when he first came into your orbit around these symptoms that he was beginning to struggle with?
That's a question he can best answer. There was a history at the onset of the illness of a depressed mood. Mm-hmm. And very often depression and the slowness that occurs with mm-hmm. that, both in thinking and sometimes moving and getting things done, can be a presenting problem and can masquerade as Parkinson's disease. And so one of the early efforts we made was to attend to this mood disorder. And he's been fortunate in having a very good psychiatrist who's been helping with that, and maybe he could say a few words about that aspect of it.
Yeah, we try to convey that we don't go alone in this travel, mm-hmm. that there's a support system which comes to bear. And what I think John did, which was very important, is eliminate the simplest problems and don't kind of focus on them, mm-hmm. Because if we focus on the kinds of concerns that all of us have, it's easy to get sidetracked. Mm. And this is part of the disease, which then happens with these pauses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, we understand, but yeah. I have to say, in the book, it's a rare experience for me to read someone who's so bright, so plugged into the medicine, as they describe the kind of stages of a degenerative challenge like this, a progressive challenge like this. Dr. Grodin saying that, you know, it may have been hard to tell what of the slowness at the beginning was some other kind of mood disorder, what might have been depression. You would have been justified in depression. You had, in 1998, yeah. lost a beloved wife of many yes. years, wife before Vicki, and had spent some time dealing with that. Do you remember when you first, as a doctor, said to yourself, there's something going on here that's more than just...
I knew something was going on, and the fact is that both my parents had Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So I've always kind of lived with a fear of Alzheimer's syndrome. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the first times I met John Grodin, I asked at the end of an hour, do I have Alzheimer's? And he categorically said, you don't have Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. For the physician to be unequivocal and be able to say, you don't have this, mm-hmm. was therapeutically a very important.
A lift.
Because mm-hmm. you're trying to reduce the stress mm-hmm. that's going on in this whole process. Mm-hmm. And in the face of uncertainty, there's nothing wrong with hope, and hope and empowerment are extremely important.
How do you explain?
As well as having a sense of humor.
Yes, please. Yes, please, as long as you can maintain it in every moment that you can. How do you explain the relationship between Parkinson's and Lewy body dementia that Vicki mentioned? What's the interaction?
I'm not sure I can answer that specifically.
Maybe Dr. Grodin. I mean, because you write very eloquently about the mental challenge, the intellectual yeah. challenges that go along with the tremor or the sometimes slowness. Are these always intertwined, Dr.
Grodin?
When,
We're not talking about the 85 or 90-year-old man sitting having some shakiness.
No, not at all.
We're talking about the 50-year-old, the 55, the 60, increasingly mm-hmm. younger, who are dealing with cognitive features. Mm-hmm. And the loss of the ability for me to get up and speak extemporaneously, mm-hmm. the loss of my ability to be able to go down a road and maintain all of the pieces of that, mm-hmm. when in fact what's happening in my brain is that I'm losing it.
Or sometimes you write just to decide you want to go from the kitchen to the bedroom, and that seems like a challenge to figure out.
Yeah, everything is a challenge. I don't mean to be hysterical about it. Bottom line is this situation really is not a good one. What am I saying? I'm saying that this is not fun.
We can see that it's not fun, and you don't gild the lily on that in this book. You're very upfront about it. We want to understand both the medical face of this and the emotional face of a very accomplished man facing just about as steep a challenge as anybody could face.
And as John can attest, that this, as he already has, this having psychiatric support, having psychological support, is extremely important.
So many listeners who want to speak with you, Doctor. I want to begin to turn to them, if we may. We've got a call here from the Republic of Estonia, across from Sweden there, and up by Russia. Vito is calling. Vito, you're on the air with Dr. Thomas Graybois.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
nice to get this, direct connection. I listen to VPR when I'm over here in my office. My father, he killed himself 25 years ago. He had Parkinson's. And the problem that he had, it seemed to me, what he told me at the time was that he had this tremendous pressure. He was on in one of the first trial stages of L-DOPA. And he told me that when he took the medication, the pressure became insufferable in his head. And if he didn't take it, the pressure became insufferable from sort of another part of his brain. And that he got no peace at all from it. And at the time, after he committed suicide, then I heard from the, read from here or there that one of the side effects of L-DOPA in the beginning was this great depression. And I was wondering if this has been dealt with. Has it, in the 25 years, has anything significantly been done? I know the cryogenics was something that was at play for a while, but because my father was in an experimental program, the doctors that were running the experiment at St. Barnabas, they weren't particularly interested, because my father was seen just as a result. That was my reaction.
Vito, let me put the question to Dr. John Groden, who's in the middle of sort of cutting edge treatments. Dr. Groden, Thomas Graybois writes about this knife edge that he feels he walks along. On one side, a kind of a great darkness, the way there's no peace. It's a 24-hour challenge in many ways, the challenges of wakefulness, challenges, in his case, even in his sleep, from the Lewy body dementia that can give some very rough nightmares. Our caller, Vito, saying his father ultimately couldn't take it. What about the drug history here?
Many people find that the initial start of treatment for Parkinson's disease is life-saving. It gives you back your functional mobility. But as time goes on, sometimes in some people, the treatment becomes a lot trickier. And I've had more than one person say to me there is a love-hate relationship with this medication, particularly the levodopa and the dopamine agonist drugs. If I don't take it, I'm terrible. But if I do take it, I get miserable. And sometimes there are motor side effects of this.
What a choice.
That it's a very fine line. And we spend a lot of time trying to adjust medication. In answer to the caller's question, we're aware of the fact that upwards of 50% of people with Parkinson's disease do have major depression. And we have to be very cognizant of that.
Thomas Graveboys is in the middle of this struggle. You're treating it all the time. Can you just give us, define Parkinson's for us? What is, Dr. Grodin, what is Parkinson's, and how does dopamine figure in, and how does it relate to, Vicky mentioned, Lewy body dementia? How do these things work together?
Well, Parkinson was first described in the 19th century, 1817, by a London physician, James Parkinson, who described a syndrome that was new at the time, consisting of a tremor, particularly when the body part, particularly the hand, was not in use, a stooped posture, postural instability, difficulty walking, and slowness. That remained a neurologic curiosity until the mid-20th century, when it was discovered that the brain cells that die in this disease, in the deep part of the brain called the substantia nigra, make a chemical called dopamine. And dopamine is deficient in the brains of patients with Parkinson's disease. And so that the treatment that was discovered in 1971 by George Coetzee was to give the precursor for dopamine, levodopa, which is now the standard treatment for Parkinson's disease. It restores the deficient neurotransmitter that makes the brain work better. It's sort of the oil of the motor system. The brain cells that die develop inclusion bodies called Lewy bodies.
And when they say when you say bodies, these are proteins.
It's a protein called alpha-synuclein that accumulates inside the brain cells. Mm-hmm. And whether they cause the brain cell death or are the consequence of that is uncertain. Mm-hmm. But they're certainly linked to the disease. And as these Lewy bodies, the protein spreads to the other parts of the brain, including the parts that deal with memory and thinking, we call that Lewy body disease. Normally, they're located just in the brain stem and cause the motor symptoms of Parkinson's disease. But when they are seen throughout the whole brain, in the cortex, in your thinking part of the brain, then that is often accompanied by the kinds of cognitive impairments that Tom has described in his book.
Is this always part of Parkinson's, or sometimes, depending on the patient?
Both depression and cognitive impairments leading to dementia are distressingly common in Parkinson's disease. Not everyone, and not everyone develops the cognitive impairments as early in the disease as Tom did. Many times there's 10, 15 years of no cognitive impairment before that starts to creep in.
Dr. Graveboys, which has been more difficult for you, or describe these? There's motor impairment, there's cognitive impairment. Describe them for us.
I mean, just 2 points. First point is that this disease is not curable at this point, but it's manageable. And if you incorporate kind of everything into an action plan, physical activity, diet, psychological support.
Yoga, in your case, as well.
You can massage therapy. You can put together a kind of a team approach and an action plan, which not only increases your one's degree of self.
Gives you some control, I guess.
It is the maintenance of control, or the maintenance of trying to maintain control throughout this. I'm on medication for depression. I'm on medication for anxiety. I'm on medication for Parkinson's. I'm on medication for cognitive dysfunction. If I had to pick it all out, bottom line is I would give up the modus situation if I could have my mental community at work in a cogent fashion.
You describe in the book movingly how for years you would try to keep up the appearance. You'd have sort of little bits of theater or drama that you could confidently play out social situations?
I was desperate, and desperate trying to keep my head above water. I didn't want anyone to know there was something wrong. I would be on rounds in the coronary care unit or whatnot, and desperately trying to kind of keeping things on track. Vicky was the one who said to me one night, you know, you're not fooling anybody. The world knows about this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, at least people in mm-hmm. Boston know
mm-hmm.
about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so why don't you just face it and move forward?
Vicky, that was in some ways a brave thing to say, but maybe you're part of the reality check in this situation.
Yes, I think that I am Tom's reality check. I'm the one that basically started to notice that there were cognitive issues, that there were simple things. You know, his inability to set the table with any...
Blanking on this or that.
On as to where anything was going.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us a while to get to the point where he really needed to kind of address the situation and realize that things were going to have to change, you know. I am his constant reality check.
You were coming into his life almost as this disease was beginning to make itself known. When Dr. Gribbles was struggling to keep his head above water, as he says, almost at the same time that your lives were becoming braided together. I believe I read you fainted on your wedding day, Dr.
Gribbles.
Yeah,
little activity that I did not indicate to anyone that happened.
He passed out the morning of our wedding on the treadmill.
You didn't know this?
I wasn't told till afterwards, and he went immediately, thankfully, with his daughters just to have
right.
a checkup quickly that morning. So we kind of started off on a bad foot that morning.
I can feel the depth of the relationship here, though, but it's grown in a time of one of the greatest kind of trials a couple could face. You know.
Well, I fell in love with a man 2 years prior to that,
mm-hmm.
and... what's here, I'm still in love with the core of the man.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, you know, he's a different man than the man I met, you know.
Tom Gribbles, how do you feel about that aspect of life, this relationship so important, you know? I mean, Vicky makes so much of your life possible.
Exactly. I couldn't do this without her. I mean, it's the pills am I taking him. Clothing,
buttoning
the
a shirt, getting
on,
your arm in a
the
sleeve.
The list goes on. Mm-hmm. Pouring orange juice over the counter.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is this little chipping away issue.
Our caller from Vito raised his father's eventual suicide. Our caller from Estonia, Vito, and I know this really gets down to the tough stuff here. But you write in the book yourself. There is a point beyond which I do not wish to go. You say that you've talked about it with Vicky and with your daughters. What is that point, and what does that mean?
Philosophically, I want it out on the table with my family that I will be the master of my destiny. I want to be able to determine when I'm going to and how I'm going to exit from this world. Now, I've been in favor of and will continue to a physician-assisted suicide. And how that is going to play out in the next X number of years, I don't know, but I'm putting it on the table.
It raises a host of moral and legal issues and also just practical issues as you, at the center of that, grapple with a progressive disease. You feel you have to say it now.
Exactly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's get a call from Florence, South Carolina, and Scott. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My heart and prayers go out to the family. I know exactly what you're going through. Both of my grandfathers had Alzheimer's. My grandmother had Parkinson's, and it's a very sad disease. What I was going to point out is I heard Alzheimer's is most likely to skip generations, and I don't know very much about the Parkinson's. Is there anything that I can do as far as you know, diet, exercise? I've heard various things like that. What would you suggest? Or is there any kind of test or anything I might can take to see about my chances?
Scott, let us pick it up. Dr. Groden, what about the hereditary side of Parkinson's? How much is hereditary? And you hear Scott asking, is there anything with someone who has it in the family that he can do?
Those are very pertinent questions. It's been traditionally believed that Parkinson is a sporadic illness with very little, if any, inheritability. In the last 10 years, however, there have been an explosion of genes that have been linked to developing Parkinson disease, but all of these are very rare, constituting less than 1 or 2% of the total Parkinson population. The quick answer to your question is there's no predictive test and no meaningful thing that you can do to minimize any risk, which is probably very small.
Scott, I understand your concern. My mother has Parkinson's, so I'm very familiar with the kind of symptoms, bless her soul, that Tom Graybosch is describing here today, and Vicky, the kind of demands made on a spouse once this situation comes. When you look at your own daughters, Dr. Graybosch, do you worry about them and her heredity here, or 1 to 2% seems like a small chance that they will face the same thing?
I worry about my daughters on a daily basis, in part because I'm worried about that they will become so involved with concern of me that that would detract from their own life. You know, mm-hmm. the old story, I don't want to be a burden. Mm-hmm. Everyone says I don't want to be a burden, but I really don't want to be a burden.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. You're not kidding.
Yeah. Right.
And yet, the facts of the illness are what they are.
I mean, and sometimes we just go along. I think it's in the book. It's just we were sitting at the table, and Vicky was doing the dishes. Mm. That's not what she generally does. She doesn't do the dishes. Mm.
Tom does the dishes.
Yeah, good.
So,
yeah, good man.
And she started to cry, mm-hmm. and for no apparent reason. And she said, "You know, sometimes I just feel so sad," mm-hmm. and. In the hundreds of letters that I've gotten over the last several years, the issue of sadness has emerged as probably the single most noticeable adjective and that when people talk about it is their profound sadness. Mm. We need to be hopeful. And there certainly, as I've already said, in the face of uncertainty, there's mm-hmm. always hopefulness.
From Buffalo, New York, and William. Hi, William. You're on the air.
Yes. I'm a physician who practices in Buffalo, New York. I'm currently retired. Mm-hmm. I've had Parkinson's for approximately 6 years. I think Parkinson's is not all one disease. For example, my situation is not nearly as bad as the doctor reports here. I'm able to walk. I'm able to write. I'm able to think, I think, and I just wanted to mention that I believe that there is another part to Parkinson's disease. Not everyone goes downhill and has all the troubles that the other doctor was describing.
There's a range here, Dr. Graybosch, and within that range, as Dr. Groden and you yourself describe it, you got a pretty tough strain of Parkinson's.
It's difficult to quantitate that, mm-hmm. Other than the fact that, yes, we sometimes say to each other at moments mm-hmm. when we're really frustrated, say we really got the raw end, the short end of the stick, mm-hmm. and but we try to minimize our whining. Mm-hmm. There's a whining threshold that can be quickly dealt with, and it's counterproductive. So we take kind of a hard-nosed attitude and going along and not whining too much and being positive.
Keep the whining to a minimum. Dr. Groden, what about the range of severity?
The caller's quite right. The standard Parkinson disease is develop a little bit of a tremor, stiffness on one side of the body that over time, mm-hmm. 10, 15, 20 years, may get progressively worse, but very often mood and mind is preserved.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular variant, mood and mind is affected early on. So that's the hard part here. This is Tom's short stick.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to comment, though, that the message that Tom tells me in his story is mm-hmm. one of hope, not of I'm thinking about ending my life, because he has put in place all of these support systems, proactive ways of dealing with things
mm-hmm.
that is admirable. And I think that is the message that I've taken from his book, and I think that's the way, Vicki, you're orchestrating things as well.
Vicki?
Well, I think we have to look at it that there are other things in life that are worse. We did get a double whammy here, but it's not the end of the world. Tom can do so much.
Mm-hmm.
He is so involved in, he's still involved in his patients, you know, lives. He's involved in the mm-hmm. organization of Lewy Body Dementia.
Mm-hmm.
He's out, you know, exercising. He's still hitting a tennis ball. He's, mm-hmm. you know, spinning. He's constantly
spinning up on the bike.
Feet, on the bike.
Feet on the pedals. And
totally. You know, and no, with no threat of falling off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the two of us feel that we're not going to sit still and let this one, you know, take us. We're mm-hmm. going to take it as much as we possibly can.
At the same time, Dr. Graybois, you're very upfront about the difficulty. You make no bones about the fact that sadness comes with it, anger has come with it, even as you pursue that hope, you pursue that fullest life possible within those parameters. It's all there.
There's ups and downs.
The pause reflects what I'm trying to put together. But Vicki says it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm, I don't want to fixate on whining a lot, but when I am whining, she has no compunction stepping up to
let's go, mister.
Says, yeah.
I don't listen to it.
It's enough already.
I don't listen to it. Yeah. You know, when we're out walking, I'm after him to move his arms, you know, walk faster. It'll, you know, because it doesn't do any good unless he makes that effort. And he does. He's amazing.
But there's a philosophical journey for both of you here. I mean, this, for you as well, Vicki, this becomes a giant part of your life, maybe at the heart of your life, dealing with, you know, some of life's most difficult stuff through Tom.
The most... skip it.
No. there are difficult parts of it, but there's difficult parts to just about any illness. Right mm-hmm. now, Tom is really, I would say he's about as functional as you could possibly
mm-hmm.
be
mm-hmm.
having this double whammy.
Mm-hmm.
I also work full time,
mm-hmm.
but we've put together a wonderful support group so that he can still be functioning. You know, he has to take 2-hour naps in the afternoon, so
mm-hmm.
we know what
mm-hmm.
times, you know, are not good for him.
Mm-hmm.
But there, you know, we don't sit at home. That's
live
for
with
sure.
it, around it, and
yeah.
through it.
I mean, there's a tendency in part to infantilize, I think, individuals as they go along
mm-hmm.
this path.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the retaining control is all interdigitated into that.
Mm-hmm.
And I get very frustrated and get very and angry when little items that are so trivial that you won't think at all about as it used to be, now they loom heavy.
Mm-hmm. Snag you up.
Yeah.
But you get through them as well, and we hear it, and we admire it. Jim is calling from Canton, New York. Hi, Jim. You're on the air with Dr. Thomas Graybois.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Over this past 3 years, I've been diagnosed with spinal stenosis, then Parkinson's, and then cancer in that order. Of the three, Parkinson's has been the most stressful to live with. And I have three reasons for it in my case. The other two things can be arrested or cured. They may not cure you in your case, but you know you've got a shot at it. With Parkinson's, you're never going to get better. You know that going in. And the second reason I have is that some Parkinson's symptoms are visible to other people and they're disturbing to them. And you have to live with that every day.
The feedback you get from people who don't understand necessarily what you're grappling with.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that would be balance for one thing. Sometimes there's a staggering to turn around. Another one would be, of course, tremors. And the thing that's the most stressful to live with is you know that sooner or later Parkinson's is going to affect your mind. Mm-hmm. Even if it isn't here yet, I'm in the early stages, you know what's coming.
So how do you put that into perspective, Jim? How do you deal with it?
Well, I think that the thing I'm doing is trying to stay as active as I can for as long as I can, and above all, as most useful as I can be for as long as I can be useful.
In that way, you're in the same boat as Tom Grabowitz, who with this book, I think, has done something really wonderful, a great gift. And Jim, I hope that you're able to do that for a long time as well. Tom Grabowitz, what about this social feedback issue? You know, the physical manifestations of Parkinson's, the slowness, sometimes the halting movement. People respond to that.
Yeah, some said that Tom Grabowitz never saw a mirror he didn't like.
And the vanity of the old days.
Oh, yeah. And that I'll look in the mirror and look at what's happening to my face. We're at parties or out walking around, and I can pick out a Parkinson patient now at 50 paces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every
you know.
I know. And then I look in the mirror and look at the storefront.
Can I just interrupt
for
a second?
Yeah, you interrupt.
Because you ask about some of the things that other people notice. One of the things that's most difficult is if Tom goes to the grocery store, he has trouble and he's paying.
Mm-hmm.
And people are behind him in line. And he has difficulty getting that credit card out. And it's a struggle and figuring out where everything goes. And people lose their patience.
You're describing the book, a cashier saying, come on, people are waiting.
Yeah,
and oblivious to what you're up against.
And the guy behind you that takes your credit card and swipes it for you. And you want to say, hold on, I have something.
Give me a minute here.
You know, but you can't say that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the slowness. It's, you know, which probably affects most people. And they think you're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
They think that there is something, or they think you're drinking. They don't understand that this is a disease, and so therefore they lose their patience, and they do look at you differently.
Mm.
And you can't go around with a sign on you saying, I have Parkinson's with Lewy body.
Back off,
you know.
Right.
So we all need to learn patience. Certainly I've learned patience. It was not my strong suit before I met Tom.
You must be Olympic grade.
No, not really.
dear listeners, take note. I mean, there's always a good reason to be compassionate first in this world, and we're learning some of that right here. Let's go to Nancy in Lexington, Massachusetts. Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. It was a great show. I'm calling as another healthcare provider. I'm an occupational therapist, and I work with many, many people who have Parkinson's disease. And one of my frustrations a lot of times is that doctors don't refer people for therapy, whether it's physical therapy or speech therapy or occupational therapy, early enough. And so by the time somebody gets referred for rehab, they're really degenerated and haven't learned skills that if they had them early on, they, you know, really would have helped them and the families throughout.
And when people do get in earlier, Nancy, are you able to see the difference? Does it?
Well, you know, we can teach them skills. There's lots of evidence right now that's supporting different kinds of things for helping people walk with metronomes and music. And we can teach people different ways as occupational therapists to do activities, you know, different kinds of clothing to wear and ways to button shirts that, you know, are easier. But, you know, oftentimes they just it's so far into the disease that it's much harder to learn something new. And one thing for people with Parkinson's is they have to think consciously about doing all the things that we do without thinking. And so the more they can practice doing something differently, the more it becomes that habit again for them, and it's easier for them to take through the disease process then.
Nancy, thanks very much for your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Dr. Grodin, what about it? Do you see physicians waiting too long to call it for what it is, to get patients out to therapy, to learn some, you know, tricks of that realm that might help them?
I think Nancy is right on point, and I thoroughly endorse everything she said. In Tom's own case, he's been very proactive about particularly physical activity, physical therapy, which I believe is very important. The best medicines work best when the body is prepared, and keeping yourself in physical shape is very important.
Let's take a call from Mary in Augusta, Maine. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling because the program really was very interesting, and then I heard the term Lewy body dementia,
yes,
which is what my mother has been diagnosed with, and I almost wish that I was hearing that term more because I understand it's a kind of a combination of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
One of the presenting symptoms that my mother is overwhelmed with, which I haven't heard brought up, is hallucinations,
mm-hmm.
Which have plagued her and scared her and also just brought her company. In fact, they tend to walk their dreams out, and she ended up walking out this spring into the snow in the middle of the night and getting bad frostbite.
Mary, let us go to it, because Dr. Grabois does write about it very explicitly with the Lewy body dementia. You're right, Dr. Grabois, comes sometimes hallucinations, certainly frightening dreams that can almost make you a threat to yourself or to anybody who's sleeping nearby.
This is not only crucial, but it's very embarrassing for me to think about what has happened at times with this REM sleep. And it may be auditory, it may be hallucinations. The auditory, as Vicky can describe, is intensely...
They're violent.
You're having nightmares, and you're responding to them.
But Thomas also had the hallucinations.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, hallucinations are very much a part of it. They also came as part of, I think, some of the drugs that we were trying in the very beginning before mm-hmm. the Lewy body was addressed. We tried two drugs that kind of... given his diagnosis, basically he should not have been on, but it's the normal thing to try to avoid taking, you know, other drugs
mm-hmm,
in
mm-hmm.
Parkinson's. But hallucinations, Tom has had hallucinations. We've had some real good ones walking around the house every once in a while.
REM sleep can be also categorized in violent activity in which you thrash out against whoever happens to be in bed with you. And I've hit Vicky at night.
Because you may be dreaming of, you write insects or animals or that sort of hallucination / nightmare is so real.
Now what's happened in our bed, we have to kind of orchestrate pillows, 9 or 10 pillows, and how we put them together.
Right.
And
It's not that bad.
Is she adequately protected from me?
Good. Buffered.
And
we've learned how to time the medication, thanks to Dr. Groden. He's talked us through this, so that the timing of the medication, the Sinemet that mm-hmm. Tom is on, makes a big difference in the number of dreams that he has. If Tom takes his final pill somewhere between 7:30 and 8, we can usually avoid a REM sleep dream. That is a controllable item in our case.
And she is on 24/7.
Yeah, we can see that. I'm sure.
I'm not trying to deify you.
But maybe she deserves it.
Yeah.
We've just got a short time here. Yeah. I mean, none of us have forever on this planet, in this world.
Yeah.
Parkinson's just makes some of those difficulties of the end much more present, and sadly, much sooner, I guess. We've just got a minute or so. I mean, what is your message to people who have or may one day get this diagnosis, Dr. Grabois?
Be active. Be proactive. Be hopeful. Empower yourself by developing an approach which will help you. Get support from family. That's crucially important, family support and psychological support. You put that all together into a urn, and you can manage the situation.
The doctor is still giving good advice right here, and we're very grateful for it. Thomas Grabois, I can't tell you how much I admire you stepping up to describe this disease from the inside out for people who face it now or who may face it one day. And with the baby boomers aging, that could be a large number. It's a large gift from you, and as somebody who knows it intimately and in the family, I'm personally very grateful to you. Thank you so much for writing this book.
Thank you.
Dr. Thomas Grabois, he is co-author with Peter Zeitlin of Life in the Balance, a physician's memoir of life, love, and loss with Parkinson's disease and dementia. Vicky Grabois, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And Dr. John Groden, thanks for coming in. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Mm-hmm.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.